That Great Business Show, Ireland's best business podcast.
ThatGreatBusinessShow.com is brought to you by De Facto Shaving Oil, the best anyone can get. Made in Ireland, sold worldwide.
Welcome to episode 83 of That Great Business Show, posting on the 15th of April, 2022. I'm your host, Conal O'Moran. And what was the reaction to our hour-long interview with the Enterprise Ireland boss, Leo Clancy, on episode 82? Well, 10 out of 10, according to the judges that I know and trust. If you haven't heard it and you're thinking of exporting to the UK, the Eurozone, and to the US, do listen back as you'll learn where and what sector EI's emphasis will be on in the coming year or two. Team GBS insider knowledge, as we would call it. On episode 83, we have a former Lord Mayor of Dublin with his strongly held views, and I mean his very, very strongly held views about the flexible working hours legislation that will affect every one of you, employer and employee. Also a fascinating business based in Limerick, but eavesdropping on some of the world's best known businesses. So have we got you hooked for the next hour or so? Yes, we do business differently. These great business insights and tips are brought to you, as always, thanks to our sponsor, De Facto Shaving Oil, the world's best all-natural shaving oil. But go and buy it right now and stop 20 million shaving foam cans being sent to landfill in Ireland because EU law says they are hazardous waste. DeFactoShave.com.
De Facto Shaving Oil. Smooth as...
As we so often say on That Great Business Show, if you want something done, give it to somebody who's busy. My first guest is currently founder and CEO of his own 20-year-old business, First Aid Supplies Ireland. He's secretary of my Drumcondra business group here in Dublin. He's a board member of the Dublin City Leo. And the big one, he's a former Lord Mayor of Dublin. For us today, though, he's a very angry business person. And why? Because of the government's proposed new right to request remote working bill announced by Tánaiste and Minister for Enterprise, Trade and Employment, Leo Varadkar, in January. Understandably, with what's going on across the world, it may have actually gone under your business radar, but it shouldn't. And let's find out why. Gerry Breen, welcome to That Great Business Show.
Thanks, Conal.
Angry?
Sort of disappointed. I mean, a wise man once said to me, the first item on the agenda should be do nothing. And sometimes, unfortunately, Irish politicians, because possibly of the Irish public, they have to be seen to be doing something. And I think it's a meaningless piece of legislation in that there's so many reasons why an employer can refuse an employee remote working. It actually amounts to nothing. But for me, the dangerous aspect of it is, while significant employment rights only kick in after 52 weeks of employment, an employee under this proposed legislation can request remote working after 26 weeks. But if they're turned down, they can then appeal it to the W or the workplace.
WRC, isn't it?
WRC. Does that put an employer into a situation where they may want to say goodbye to this employee, but then they have an appealing process? So, you know, I think on all fronts, it's fairly meaningless. And, you know, I would just say to politicians, go back to my first point. The first thing on the agenda should be do nothing. Do we need to do anything? And I would say trust employers and employees to do the right thing that suits their business. I have an accountant. She's not a direct employee. She's a contractor to my business. She's worked with me for 19 years. So she basically didn't come in for the guts of 2 years. Was I fuming? Was I livid? No, it actually worked for the both of us, because just given the nature of the work, her maturity, her diligence, her loyalty to the business. So I would say to the government, please don't go ahead with this draft legislation, because not only will it do nothing for employees, but it actually may cause a lot of trouble for employers, not because, you know, because the appeal situation. And all these little things, they cost business time, they cost business focus, and they cost business attention. And critically, you know, business is relentless. And I would say to the government, get out of the way and let businesses have their relationship with the workers. They're not going to do things if they've a valued employee. They let them work from Kyrgyzstan or somewhere else as long as they're delivering the goods to the business.
I've known you a long time and I'm hoping to reel you back, but I know it won't happen. Go back to the very beginning and tell me, what is the problem with this piece of legislation? What is the proposal and why are you objecting to it?
I just thought it was a bit of fluffery. It was a bit of meaningless because the proposal itself is so inherently weak in terms of for employees that there's all of 13 different reasons, you know. So it's going to be, if an employer doesn't want to give an employee the right to work remotely, pick your menu, it's an a la carte refusal. But that's not the critical thing. So for me, it's too much PR and spin, you know, get real. And also the danger aspect for me is the appeal to the WRC.
But that's a small single item out of, I don't know how many pieces of, items are within the legislation itself.
Within this legislation, it's a critical part, because if you're an employer and you have to tramps down, I don't know where the WRC is. Thankfully, I've good and loyal employees, but I don't know where it is. So,
mountain, you know, out of a molehill?
Absolutely.
No, I'm saying, are you making a mountain?
No,
out of
I'm
a
not.
Mountain?
I'm not. You know, don't let on to be doing something you're not doing, because it's not delivering. It's not delivering for employees, but it also could cause a lot of cost and trouble for employers.
You are familiar with the political system, very familiar. You've served your time. You know that this is what politicians do, that they, exactly what you don't want them to do, they get involved in areas that they should not and that they know sweet nothing about.
You know, I wouldn't throw too many stones. I mean, the initiatives that were brought in by this government, and again, I'll defend it on this, in terms of the insurance. Look at what's happened to the insurance claims. What are they down, 40%? Now they have to go into the next phase of hammering the insurance companies and getting the premiums down. That will be a solid piece of work that will be delivered, not just to employers and companies and businesses, but also to the lay people out there.
How would this legislation that you're angry about affect your business?
It wouldn't affect my business at all.
Why?
Because I have a small business, I have smashing staff, and I have 4 reps on the road, and, you know, it doesn't really arise from my business.
But so therefore, what are you getting upset about?
Well, I'm a citizen of Ireland. I feel I can, you know, I've earned the bruises on my body. And I am passionate about this country and I'm passionate about the democratic system. You know, a la, you see what's happening elsewhere in the world. We should be all striving to support really good implementation of our democracy.
I would love to think that politicians are going to listen to the podcast and say, oh my God, Jerry Breen said don't implement this. Realistically, what happens next? It will trundle its way through the Oireachtas, won't it?
Well, not necessarily. It may just head into the sand and stay there.
But does it happen? I mean, there will be somebody in opposition somewhere who will make hay of this.
Hay of what?
Of this piece of legislation. And they will say that it is in the workers' interest that they have this, I won't call it a protection, but that they have this option to work remotely because it's been given to them.
No. I mean, Jed Nash, who's the Labour person in this area, he basically called for the legislation to be retired, the draft legislation.
So where would this have come from initially in your political experience? Did this come out of a politician's head, out of a department head, or where would it come from?
I would have said a spin doctor and a politician's head, yeah.
And that was the beginning and that might be the end of it.
Hopefully.
So, back to your business. What are you doing?
I am supplying the first aid needs for over 4,000 customers around the country.
Big
over
business.
20 years. It's a small business, but it's a great business. It's a lovely business.
But 4,000 is a lot of people or a lot of businesses.
Yeah.
Because you're not doing this, you're not going door to door.
No, but it's a fantastic business, and I'm really privileged to have gotten it from a previous employer, Smith & Nephew, 20 years ago on the 1st of July. And I sort of, you know, I think anyone who works for themselves are lucky. They're privileged. I often say some people, unfortunately, go from the tyranny of school to the tyranny of employment to the tyranny of retirement. And I think as a self-employed person, you have needed the last two aspects. I enjoyed school, but then I didn't enjoy it. So it was a tyranny. And I stumbled into college when you could repeat your leaving and do the matric and accumulate all the points because I was an appalling student in secondary school towards the end. But so, yeah, hugely privileged. I don't pinch myself every morning, but I just, you know, there's business is relentless. So it does demand a huge amount of you, but it also, you know, it also delivers great fun and great energy.
You are hoping that your piece of legislation, not your piece of legislation, but the piece of legislation that you mentioned there, the flexible work legislation or proposal, will wither on the vine. What else would you love to see to get out of your, that is, Gerry Breen's way in trying to do better business and more of it?
I would ask the politicians to go back to what the Troika said all of 11, 12 years ago, basically that the Irish legal system needs reform. It's a personal thing. I had a pal who was charged with dangerous driving. He had to go to court for about 20 or 25 appearances. At one stage, the guard who did the technical assessment of the accident was on a secondment or a sabbatical in Australia. So the huge amount of costs he incurred to be found innocent of all charges. And I just feel, I don't know how you can sustain yourself. I was frothing at the mouth for him. So, you know, that's on an individual and a personal level. But, you know, we had the Troika deliver an assessment of Ireland. And one aspect they spoke about was the legal system. And I often think if you go into the legal system, it's a bit like being blindfolded, going into a restaurant, no prices on the menu, and there's people sitting around eating food and you're paying for the bill at the end of the day. I think there's a huge management, practical management that needs to be applied to the legal system, because you've got, I would point to barristers more than anyone, because solicitors to largely perform significant work. But also, Conal, a lot of lay people, unfortunately, particularly to do with divorce cases, they get so angry, it blinds them, and they put themselves in poverty for the rest of their lives because of the legal system. And we should have some system that, manages. I'm sure there's some element of management, and I'm sure there has been attempts, but I do think there needs to be further work on that.
I'm loath always on a business podcast to get involved into politics, because it's just, there are better people who do it better, let's put it that way. But I often wonder, and since you're here in front of me and that you do actually know inside out the system, why do politicians, and they're, am I being too cynical in thinking that the majority of them are only there to get re-elected, when if that is the drive, why do they not go for so-called low-hanging fruit? For example, to take on the lawyers.
I would say many of them don't have the wherewithal to even start to do it.
When you say wherewithal, use other words.
The capacity, the ability, you know.
The capacity, like the intellect. They don't have enough. Okay.
And possibly the experience.
Make one small switch. Switching from shaving foam to all-natural de facto shaving oil will give you the smoothest, softest shave ever. Switching from shaving oil to de facto helps stop 20 million non-recyclable shaving foam cans go to landfills every year. Switching from shaving oil to de facto will save your skin, your pocket, and your planet. DeFactoShave.com.
Everyday accounting can be a bit of a drama for SMEs. However, BigRentCloud.com takes the drama away with its simple and easy-to-use cloud-based accounting and payroll software designed for SME owners. Rate and send invoices, manage VAT reports and obligations, run management reports, link directly to Irish banks, automatically import purchase invoices, and so much more. All with five-star customer support. BigRentCloud.com, 100% Irish-owned and a proud member of Team GBS.
All that great business show advertisers are Team GBS approved. Back them.
That great business show.
You know, if you're trying to make a name for yourself, and I think many politicians are driven by name recognition and that they just want to be known as being something special, would it not make sense? Another area would be infrastructure. Like, build the dot houses. It doesn't matter how you start it, but be seen to be doing it. And yet they don't seem to be doing it. They don't catch anything by the scruff and actually do it.
The system mitigates against direct action. You know, it's only in crisis we can achieve that. I would have particular objection to what many of the Labour politicians have done in terms of housing, trying to interfere to their own wishes in terms of the planning process and stuff like that. It's a very difficult job.
I actually agree with that and I accept that, yeah.
The complexity is in the simplicity. You know, it's hard to describe.
But, you know, in Britain, and I know we won't even go down that route, but Boris Johnson is trying to he's trying to get himself into the history books as being the next Churchill or whatever he fancies. And he's trying to do this levelling up. Now, it probably will not come to anything, but it's the ambition that he has. When was the last politician in Ireland that you heard with ambition or stating an ambition?
I'm probably going to be pilloried, but I would think Mary Harney would have had ambitions. Okay. Now, you mightn't agree with those ambitions. I do also think that politicians and the public try to make out that the government, and, you know, shall we say, the government in its widest sense, should deliver everything. They can't deliver everything. If you take, the migrants coming in from the Ukraine, etc., I would love to see a GAA come, Vincent de Paul. Now, I know the Red Cross are doing it, but we look to the government. And unfortunately, then you have politicians who try to make out that the government will deliver everything. Maybe they should stand back and say, you know, it's not entirely within the government's remit to deliver for these unfortunate people. Maybe they, you know, a bit like what happened with the Special Olympics, where they got communities around Ireland to host things. And I think there has been significant attempts to that. And I think that chap, Colm O'Gorman, is going into that area, as I remember it, when he's moving from the amnesty job. So I would say, we should be looking at that. The government should be saying, we need to pull in other aspects of society. The GAA, fantastic community resource. The Vincent de Paul is a charity, fantastic charity, you know, proven over the years, have the safeguards. So, you know, I often said about the housing crisis, one of the significant problems of the housing crisis was, you know, politicians banned babysits.
I thought you were going to say, you know, they're banned babies.
Unfortunately, I didn't think Owen Murphy, when he became Minister for Housing, he had the experience. He was only 20 or 30 something. You know, the first thing he should have done was done a bit like Dun O'Malley, free education. It's announced. He should have said, we're in a crisis. Bedsits are re-legalised.
So why do people who are well advised, these guys now have 2, 3, 4 advisors each, why do they not just do something like that? And it would solve it very rapidly, take some of the sting out of it very rapidly.
Colonel, the system, you know, yes, Minister, is alive and well. I mean, even at the low level I was at in Dublin City Council or as Lord Mayor, you know, there's an inertia there that doesn't want to change. And also I would say, and I've often said this, government is good at regulation and that type of slow movement. It's not good at delivery. And we should identify what it's good at. It's not that they're bad people in the public service. My dad was a public servant. My mother was. the nature of the work and the nature of the environment where you have, you can announce something, be it Owen Keegan, that he's going to put a cycle lane on, in your beloved Sandymount, and then the hoo-ha happens and he can't go ahead with it. So if
that's called the rule of law.
Yeah, no, but my point would be is if you're a public servant in that environment, at a local government level, you're going to get very frustrated. And if you get frustrated, you know, your option is to get out of there and move to a job where you have significant autonomy. And I would say to people, be very careful what we're doing in terms of, you know, public people who serve on boards, on state boards, etc. I remember an ex-city manager in Dublin, he said he made more money at the one or two private directorships he had. He was a director in the HSE, and the grief he got for that. So be very careful. I mean, we've seen
what
it.
Would you do?
How do you mean?
Well, you said, you know, be careful about that. What are you actually saying about what people should do about if they want to be directors of state companies?
Yeah, well, you take what happened to the lady from the rehab when she went in for 8 hours into PAC.
Angela Kearns, was it?
Yeah, and she won her case. If you take the case of, say, the confirmation hearing for the newest appointee in the Supreme Court in the States, it was appalling what they were saying to her. You know, trying to go back on her sentencing records.
But that's America.
No, it's not. It's the same thing here. If you go in, you know, they couldn't put a nail on John Delaney because he just bullied them. He went in with a prepared statement and says it can't deliver anything. So we have to be careful. And, you know, this what happened recently with Tony Hoolan. I would say that's completely legitimate what was happening there. And yet it became a political football. So, you know, we'd want to be careful because if you continually unfairly, you know, really criticise and pillory people who were involved in that public affairs, so we call it, for a wider level, they won't go near it. I mean, I find in my own business, the first aid supplies, I have so much autonomy. And the great thing about business is the amount you input is fairly much the amount you get out of it. Unfortunately, in politics, you can be the biggest spoofer and the most ineffective individual in the world, and you can be seen as bee's knees.
You were a city councillor and ex officio became Lord Mayor for a year, and that was a full-time job because you had to give up everything else during that period. There is now this plan to have a full-time mayor for Dublin. For or against?
I would be for, as long as the supports and the structures are there to allow them to do the job effectively.
Does it not put yet another layer of government in a teeny, weeny, teeny little country?
No.
And the teeniest little city?
No.
Why?
Because you need someone where the buck stops. The difficulty for an executive Lord Mayor for a period of 3 or 5 years is they may have to try and persuade 63 councillors to go with X, Y, and Z. But at least there'll be a focus. The buck will stop with someone. I would be in favour of it.
But the buck stopped with you. And
yeah, I was only there for a year. There's a Chinese proverb, and wait till you see the bodies of your enemies, you know, float down the river. You know, I would have had to, I'm not saying bully, I would have had to push my weight around to achieve certain things within the council.
I don't care if you were given a 2 or 3 year term, but ex officio as being an elected councillor without a whole brand new infrastructure put on top of or put in the middle of what is there already.
Yeah, I wouldn't be Jesuitical. I'd go with either. I would be against adding.
But you've seen the inside and you know what would work. Would you, if you had had another 2 years on top of the other one, so 3, would you have achieved whatever you set out to achieve?
I suppose, Conal, a lot of the job is ceremonial.
Yeah.
And we've witnessed some councillors drinking the, shall we say, the free bar dry. I tried to work the other way. I tried to be executive as much as I could. I got very involved in the businesses in the city centre, trying to improve the realm of the city centre. I got the twinning with Beijing, unfortunately, in reflection now I'd possibly pull that back, but I got the twinning with Beijing achieved. I mean, I could write a book about what we had to do to achieve that.
And what do you make of this other one about, was it there when you went in, or did you even create this Dublin business where they pay 5%
the levy?
Was that one of yours?
No, it wasn't. That was there predated me. It was an initiative of the Dublin City Business Association.
And are you in favour of or against? As we record this, it's the closing of the vote to see whether BID will live or BID will die.
I would be in favour of, even though my good friend Mannix Flynn is mentioned in every ad in the Irish Times against it.
Why are you in favour of BID?
Because it's coming back to this thing that the government can't deliver everything. The city council can't deliver everything. Sometimes you need an additional thing. And, you know, I'm involved in Maidrim Condra, and then there's a village group separately in Maidrim Condra where they pull a few bob from businesses and they have flower beds, et cetera, and painting.
But a few bob is different to, is it 5% levy on the businesses?
It's not a huge amount. And, you know, I think the BID company has delivered for Dublin.
Okay, well, I mean, that's your view and I know no better.
You obviously don't agree with me, but...
No, I don't. I actually do not know, to be fair. Not to be fair, just as...
You know, it's easy to knock down. That was an initiative that started in the States, trying to improve the whole environs of cities. And I think it's to be applauded.
You are also Secretary of Maidrim Condra. Now, that's a clever little initiative. Small, but perfectly formed. Doing what?
Once a month, the Skyline Hotel, lovely people, deserves all the support it gets. They give us a room free tea and coffee once a month, the second Thursday of every month. We have a guest speaker. We've had your friend Owen Keegan. We've had David McRedmond from Unpost. We've had Kevin Toland, formerly of the DAA. We've had Larry Murn. We've had the Archbishop of Dublin. A whole range of
people.
And
more importantly, of late, you've been nicking my podcast guests.
Well, we had John Toohey today, who was fantastic. And last month, we had Paul Keogh. But he was a former classmate of mine.
Which you didn't know at the time, but then we'll pass over that.
Yeah, I'm hoping to get Niall Moyna. In terms of fitness and whatnot. So it's a lovely initiative. We run from we run from September through to June, take 2 weeks break, and then
2 months.
2 months break. It's only 200 quid a head. And basically,
what does it do? I mean, what does it deliver to members?
It delivers connections in a very relaxed and formal way, and also real life experiences from entrepreneurs.
No, that's your guest speakers. But what does it do? Because I'm trying to broaden this out for listeners who may be, whether they're in parts of Limerick or parts of Cork or parts of Galway, wherever. What would they learn from small, 25 members, is it? Or is that what pitches up?
Yeah.
Members of Maidrim Condra.
They will get little tips from various other members, what's worked for them. You know, I was just saying this morning, a few months ago, we applied for the SBCI, 100,000 for the business at 3%. You go onto the SBCI website, you say, yes, Brexit has affected my business, not necessarily negatively. But then with that voucher, you go to your financial institution, which I did with the Bank of Ireland, and get 100,000 at 3%. Where would you be getting it? The other thing, you know, just... the person who does my technical support is a company called Texture. I've had him through Maidrim Condra for the last 7 or 8 years. He introduced me at a chamber breakfast in South Dublin to the girl who does my marketing, and she's been with me over 4.5 years. When you're of a certain age, it's very hard to learn new tricks, and I think it's critical to know what you don't know and appreciate what you don't know, and then access the information. So she introduced me to a web designer. He's done my website. He's now done the Maidrim Condra website. And you can get locked in a mental tunnel when you're working in a business, because it's relentless. That's what I said at the Leo a few times. Business is relentless. You have to get focused in on it. And the more focus you give it, the more successful you'll be. You'll see what should be done, what can't be done, can be done, what might be done. And you build on build and build on your confidence, be it the ISO 9001 we got a few years ago, online trading website, catalogue, et cetera, et cetera. And you're all the time iterating with the business, what's working, what's not working. And I often describe how clever the COVID strain is, that it doesn't copy identically. It slightly mutates. That's what businesses should be doing, because you're all the time trying to anticipate the dangers to your business, but also the opportunities, and building up your capital reserve and also your management capacity.
Give me three of Gerry Breen's top tips from all the years that you've been in business, things that people really should know about, but very often just don't do.
My first core one would be simplicity. When I had the ISO, auditor out, when I was applying for the ISO, he says, "You run a very simple business." I says, "Yeah, and I'm planning on making it simpler. You know, don't make things complex." You were in the same school as me, and Joe Costlow spoke about NASA sending spaceships to wherever they were going. And what they worked at was removing the number of critical parts, because it's a bit like Ryanair. They don't need a DAA arm to come out to the plane. You can push a trolley up to the plane, or you don't even need that. They have the steps themselves. That has removed about three probably critical parts. So simplicity, and it really hammered home to me when I was watching a program about Robert Maxwell. He had 800 companies. Why do you think he had 800 companies? Because he was hiding stuff and he was criminal. And again, with the Leo, I'm on the evaluation committee. When we're looking at applications, I love simplicity. I love a husband and wife team, or whoever else, a partner and partner team, I suppose we have to say nowadays, or identify themselves as partners. Anyway, reminds me of American Beauty. Do you remember that? Simplicity. That's the first and last principle I would say to people. And probably the only other one is keep it cheap. Keep it. Don't be afraid to save money. I have 5 Skodas in the business. "Oh, you're not driving a Skoda." My brother used to come home from England 18 years ago. "You're driving a Skoda." The fantastic cars. But no, my point would be keep the cost down as much as you can. And, sweat the assets as much as you can. Those two simple things, I would say. But again, as I say, when I'm looking at applications as part of the group of people around Leo, I always look for simplicity. When I see complexity, I type and go, mm-mm.
Leo evaluation, mistakes made. So if anybody is about to apply for a Leo grant or whatever, what are you seeing that they shouldn't do?
Use plain English.
Yeah, that's an interesting one.
I championed plain English in Dublin City Council. But it's extraordinary the way people think, if they latch on to, we start using this term in the Leo, MVP, a minimum viable product, MVP. I said,
that came out of Silicon Valley, FYI.
I've been in business 40 years. I've never heard that. Don't use it. Please don't use the term pivot. I know you don't like that either.
No, we love a good pivot. We love a business that pivots.
No.
I just love one that changes.
Change.
Yeah, that pivot.
So I would say that. But it's a bit like going for a job interview. You're not going to get the job because you performed well at the interview. You're going to get the job because of your past record. And I love to see people who started off in a garden shed and then, after that was successful, built up again, or went to the food markets to try out their product. But I love the Leo. There was, and I listened to your interview with Leo Clancy, and you were trying him on about the Leo and the type of, does it become like a local government institution? When the Leo was being brought back into Dublin City Council, I intervened with Owen Keegan, and they gave the Leo an office that had almost like singular access just on the mezzanine floor as you go into Woodkey. So it's almost like it's not hidden away in the catacombs or up in the 25th floor of civic offices. Simple things like that. But I'm sure we can improve what we're doing You always have to try and see how we're doing and how we perform. And anyway, sorry.
Final question. Who would Gerry Breen hire in a heartbeat?
I would hire Michael Burke of Chanel Veterinary and Chanel Human Care down in Loughrea.
Big factory when you're going through Loughrea, yeah. Sitting there over on the right-hand side. And
I never met the man in my life, but he was a vet by training. And I remember when I was in Smith & Nephew the first time in the early 80s, and then I rejoined them out of Dire Necessities in the noughties. And then they were very kind to give me over their first aid business because they were getting out of it corporately. He used to order type of dozens of prep bandages. And I think I don't know the guy, but he seems to be fantastically commercial and initiative. I mean, there's other people that would fly under the radar. If you take the three Smith brothers, Smith's Toys.
Oh, brilliant.
Yeah.
And that's now a real European player.
Yeah,
and incredible.
I think someone mentioned, I think it was Paul Keogh probably mentioned the Port West people as
that's
well.
Right.
And I would, see some of them in terms of the business I'm in myself. So there's, it's great to see businesses that type of, no scandal about them and just drive on and...
be hugely, hugely successful.
Yeah, yeah. And not chasing PR, not like First Aid Supplies with their fantastic defibrillator, probably the best in the world, the Benihard C series.
At how much?
Oh, cheapest chips.
Well, give us a discount.
The entry level.
Team GBS gets what discount?
You don't have a heart, so you don't need a heart restarter. The prices go from 1,000 up to 1,300.
And what deal will you do for Team GBS members, as in our listeners? If somebody rings you up and says, Gerry, you were brilliant on That Great Business Show. What's the deal?
If they go on the website, we look after them.
Okay. All right. Gerry Breen, founder of First Aid Supplies and wears many, many hats. Thank you so much for joining us on That Great Business Show.
You're listening to That Great Business Show.
ThatGreatBusinessShow.com.
Everyday accounting can be a bit of a drama for SMEs. However, BigRentCloud.com takes the drama away with its simple and easy to use cloud-based accounting and payroll software designed for SME owners. Raise and send invoices, manage VAT reports and obligations, run management reports, link directly to Irish banks, automatically import purchase invoices and so much more. All with 5-star customer support. BigRentCloud.com, 100% Irish owned and a proud member of Team GBS.
Thinking of travel? If so, make sure to make DeFacto, the world's best shaving oil, your choice of travel companion. A 25 milliliter bottle of DeFacto means no hassle at airports, no bulky cans to carry, and the guarantee of the world's best shave. DeFactoShave.com.
All That Great Business Show advertisers are Team GBS approved. Back them.
Backing great women-led businesses on every show.
Our next guest is a director of what I think is an absolutely fascinating business that effectively eavesdrops on big name businesses around the world. And of course, as usual, I'm looking for a cheap headline because Limerick-based Eastway Tech isn't doing anything naughty, but they are paid to monitor business processes for big name clients that I'm not allowed to mention. But if I whisper that those names could include Sanofi, Mondelez, PepsiCo and Danone, you get the drift. Big names. The 20-year-old company says they are expert in reliability. They make sure that industrial plants around the world can keep going 24/7, on and on and on. The company is HQ'd in Castle Troy, Limerick, with offices in the US and Singapore. It's a family business. The Burkery family set it up 20 years ago. And Elaine Burkery, director and engineer, joins me now. Elaine, welcome to That Great Business Show.
Thank you, Conal. Great to be here.
You hate me saying that you're eavesdropping on the big names of the world.
I do, because they're very sensitive about their data and their privacy. But we know that what we're doing is improving their reliability and that there's no risk to their business by doing so.
I think, I can't remember where I read about you, but I saw this and I said, that is fascinating. What you do is, explain.
Yeah, so we're condition monitoring specialists. So that's a type of predictive maintenance. So we use sensors to monitor vibration, temperature and other parameters to look at asset condition, machine condition in the manufacturing environment and predict when a failure could happen.
You don't have to name names, but what kind of work does that mean? So take a plant and the machine is going see the kind of engineering I think of. I'd presume nothing goes anymore. What does your monitoring show or help do?
Yeah, so what we would be doing originally is if you set up a machine on our system, we'd be looking at what's normal operation first. So all the different mechanical parts within the equipment. Exactly. The motors, the gears, the belts, the shafts, anything within it, what's normal for it, okay? You might have a problem you detect immediately, or you might be what we'd say is establishing normal behaviour, a baseline. So if you're looking at vibration, which is the primary parameter that we would monitor, you're looking at levels of vibration, and then within those levels, you're looking at frequency spectra. So not to get too technical, but within...
Which you're doing.
Yeah, but I can't resist.
I did say you before we started, you love your job.
Well, the devil is in the detail, you see, because what we are all about is being able to define to the client what's actually wrong with her machine. And you have to be able to analyse the vibration pattern to do that.
And you're doing this from Castletroy, County Limerick, to bases literally all over the world. Where's the furthest flung place that you're monitoring?
Yeah, I'd say the furthest is probably Uruguay. Yeah.
Wow. Now, a machine in Uruguay isn't doing the right... It goes back to Castletroy. What happens?
Yeah, so an automated alert will be sent to the client and to ourselves to say something is not right here. That's if the alarm is over a certain threshold. So then we have a system of machine learning models, which will have looked at what's happened before on that machine or similar machines. And we also have our 24/7 condition monitoring experts. They'll analyze the information. They'll get directly on to the guy that needs to know or girl that needs to know. So the maintenance manager typically, and advise them no concern, advise them it's urgent, or advise them that we need to monitor this for a period of time to see what to do.
How often does that happen? I don't mean in Uruguay, anywhere.
Oh, anywhere. Well, that would depend on machine. You could have problematic machines that may occur a fault every couple of months. You could have machines that would run smoothly and only occur a fault every couple of years. It just depends on the application, how often they run, general maintenance practices within the plant.
But you're talking about, you know, a machine that might give trouble once a year, once every 3 years or something. Mm. There are many, I'm going to say millions of machines. How can you know what each one of those machines, what their baseline should be's are, if you know what I mean?
Sure.
I'm not very technical, am I?
I like your terminology. Well, we have a lot of experience in this area. As you said, we're 20 years in business. And what we have done in the last number of years is use that experience we've drawn from across different types of manufacturing in different environments. And there's also ISO standards to support us. But generally, it's on our experience. What's normal for the machine? What vibration pattern is telling us is based on what we know, what we have done now for, as you say, almost a quarter of a century.
And that quarter of a century of knowledge presumably has to be top secret. That is your IP, isn't it?
Yeah, so well, our using vibration to analyse machines is an accepted concept across reliability. What our IP is having turned that into technology that we have a hardware and software, our own proprietary system, and then also around being able to move with our clients' needs and be able to further develop based on what we're finding in their plants and also our consultative approach.
You love a good consultative approach, do you?
I do, because you will find that people will say, oh, we have a system or we have sensors. And then you'll talk to them after a period and say, but the machine still failed. And that's where, if you have Eastway, your machine won't fail.
Okay. How do you get to the point where you have that conversation, though? I mean, nobody likes admitting that they're wrong. And the head manager or the maintenance manager is not going to say, oh, yeah, I was wrong. I should have had Eastway. Should have gone to Specsavers. Should have gone to Eastway.
Well, it can depend, you know, and there is a lot of pressure with regard to operational efficiency, both in Ireland and internationally. A lot of plants are expanding. They need to get their output increased. They may have the same assets. Sweat the assets, isn't that a term, you know?
That is the term.
And then, so often, just breakdown is not acceptable and they have to look at alternatives. If something hasn't worked, yes, it may take a time for that to, I suppose, be accepted. But we can step in at that point if they've been using an alternative, or often we might be the first there to show what we can do.
Your fingers, I know you specifically do not want me to name names, mm-hmm. but let's take an imaginary large corporation.
Yes.
And your fingers are into some of the largest. How from Limerick have you managed to do that? I presume mm-hmm. that there are others in the reliability industry.
There are, and some of them are very established traditional condition monitoring companies providing hardware systems. But they were also on offer when we decided to design our own, because when we spoke to our clients, they just weren't fitting the need.
Did you have clients that you could speak to, if you follow me?
Oh, yes, yes. So originally we offered consultancy services for a number of years, and it was around 2013 that we decided to take the shift into developing our own hardware.
And what made you take that shift?
Clients started asking us. So we were doing manual services whereby, and some of which we still do, we would go onto sites and take vibration or temperature with handheld devices and take that information in our vans, drive it back to Limerick and analyse it. And as I say, that service is still ongoing. But clients were saying, we want continuous monitoring. We want 24/7 monitoring. I have a new asset coming in. There's investment into this site and it cannot go down. So we tried two alternative systems back then. They didn't work. They didn't do what they said in the tin. So we set about putting together our own. And
when you say we, you're actually talking about you had a huge amount to do with this, as in you brought, I think, if mm-hmm. I read the story correctly, you brought the smarts or more smarts to the business to up the game.
Well, yeah, I would say that from
then
the...
Do not be modest. This is not the modesty show. This is the immodest show.
Well, I would say that what I brought to it maybe was just to take that perspective on what could we do. Bernard, my father, who's still the CEO, the MD, he had very much come from the pain of the customer. So, and he still brings that. Have you talked to the customer?
Explain that about why you say that he had the pain of the customer. Because prior to setting up the company, he was doing what for 20 or 5 or 30 years?
He had come from a maintenance craft background, and then he had gone and progressed up through the ranks to plant manager of a packaging company. So he had suffered the pain of calls for breakdowns and production interruptions.
Which will always happen on the day that you're on your holiday, Christmas Day, christening or birthdays or marriages, whatever.
Yes.
It'll happen on those days best, doesn't it?
It will. Yes, I remember holidays where we were meant to leave. We couldn't leave on time because those breakdowns happened. So, yes, he knew that pain. And so when clients started to say to him at that point, we have machines that can't go down, he understood that. And at that time, my brother was involved at, with product development in his previous role and was just joining our team. So we set him the task of developing the product, which he did.
And from then, you have grown into an international company. Now, you did explain to me that part of that expansion is on the back of contacts made in Ireland.
Yes.
Have you managed to crack open any other markets internationally without piggybacking, in a nice way,
yeah.
on your international clients based in Ireland?
Yes. So about, it was early 2020. We had been doing a fly-in and fly-out.
I know the way that you looked there. You were trying to figure out. Nobody knows what year it is, do they?
That's exactly it.
Was that? Oh, I don't know. Sometime in pre-COVID.
I was thinking, is it 2 years, you know? So we had been doing since mid-2018 a fly-in and fly-out strategy for Singapore. And that had been working well, but we knew that if we wanted to expand our customer base there, we really needed to put feet on the ground. So it was July 2020 when we hired a technical sales manager based in Singapore. And we have a partner there supporting us technically. And that really led us then to be able to create connections locally and in the wider Southeast Asia region. So in some companies, we have pending projects in Cambodia and in Malaysia through those contacts.
Wow. It is an infinitely applicable product, isn't it? I mean, yeah, there is probably no end to the numbers of machines that are running in the world, be they large or small. At night, when you're dreaming, how big is the market that you might be able to attain or break or accumulate, whatever word you would like to use, for the company?
So the global vibration monitoring market has been sized by a couple of market research companies. So it's estimated to be 2025, $1.87 billion. Our Blue Sky vision is to take 5% of that if we can.
Okay, so yep. What's that, about 90 million?
Exactly, yeah.
Not bad on maths, eh?
Yeah. The secret engineer in you is coming out.
I was going to claim that. I won't even go there anyway. Yeah. We won't go there. 90 million. And what would that mean for the company? Would you know? Obviously, you're hiring. I think you told me you're hiring already.
Yeah, so we're currently recruiting in the US at the moment. That's to expand our sales team there.
But you'd take somebody from Ireland and plant them over there, would you?
We could. Now, Kevin, my brother, is based there already. Yeah, so
he's over. Is he in Portland, Oregon? Is that what I saw? Or?
He's in Oakland, California.
Ah, Oakland. Okay, yeah.
Yeah. So he's there already to manage that. But yes, absolutely, we could hire here for that role.
And what is the role that, what are you looking for? We'll put out a recruitment call for you here.
Great, yeah. We're looking for somebody that understands the needs of the manufacturing industry, has perhaps sold to the manufacturing industry already there in the US, would bring a wealth of network and contacts if possible, and is really be able to shout about what Eastway can do for the potential new clients.
And why California? Because we're always shouting about Connecticut here being the next logical side of the other part of the big pond.
Sure.
And but that's on the other side of yet again. So that's, you're only adding another 3,500 miles when you go from Connecticut to California.
Yeah, that's a question we ask ourselves a bit as well, because a lot of our clients, existing clients in the US, would be more Midwest based. However, Kevin has family reasons. His wife is from California.
Oh, okay.
So
there's always a reason.
There's a reason. Yeah, yeah. So that's why they're based there. Yeah.
And in terms of further cracking the American market, like, it is vast.
It is.
So you're going to recruit one person. Is it for the States? Is that person, man or woman, meant to trudge from door to door? Or what is the process?
Sure. Yeah. It's just a starting point with regard to one person. So we would be building on that team by the end of the year. So we would hope to add a second to support and then two more the following year. But there are very concentrated pockets of our potential customers in the States.
So like what exactly are the industries that you love?
Yeah, so life sciences, food and beverage, they are the industries that really come to us.
I never mentioned their names earlier.
No, good, yeah, yeah. So the driver is, as you said, our system could be applied to any machine really, but why would someone put it on their equipment? And it's, what would it save them? If they don't have a high cost of downtime, well, then maybe there's no need for us. And that's just the way it is. So a company that can't afford a breakdown because of the impact on getting product out the door or the cost of the asset itself, all tied into maybe an hourly downtime cost for that area, they want us.
What was the biggest save? I don't know whether you even monitor this. The biggest save that you've made for any company, you don't have to name the company, but did you, the machine was teetering and you came in Superman or Superwoman-like and said, woohoo, and we will save you this.
Sure. We actually have done this because we're always, and particularly in recent years, trying to do that. What are measurable value? What are we actually saving you? And we had one the year before last where we saved $250,000.
I won't ask you what year that was because we won't remember.
Exactly, yeah. $250,000 in lost, prevented or avoided downtime production.
And again, I won't ask you the cost of your service, but it presumably is only a fraction of that $250,000 for that plant.
Yes. Yeah, and you would take into account that
you're not just... So you're allowed to say things like value for money, tremendous value for money.
It is a drop in the ocean compared to what could be saved, yes.
And is there somebody sitting down in Castletroy, County Limerick, 24-7, monitoring all of these monitors? Or is that also automated? Can you go to bed and if something goes wrong, your mobile phone goes off and says, there's a problem in Uruguay, there's a problem in California or whatever?
Yeah, so the system is 24/7 and we have our team of engineers supporting that. But the initial alerts are automated. So if you have a problem with your machine, you don't need someone from Eastway to hit a button to you know about it. It's automatically gone to you. And the team then are investigating why that is.
And I was asking you this because you did ask me, what questions will I ask? And I said, I've no idea because I make them up. If there is, and say California does have a lot of seismic activity, if there's seismic activity below a big factory, we'll take an Intel or something like that, and It obviously vibrates everything.
Yeah.
Can you monitor that? Or sorry, can you extract that out of the monitoring?
You can. So if it was at the scale whereby it's actually creating vibration on the floor of the factory and that's traveling up through the machinery, that can damage the machinery. But yes, so that's back to my frequencies. When you look at a vibration spectrum, you would be looking for frequencies that are related with the machine. So that would be shaft speeds, and then gear ratios would tie into that. If you have vibration from the floor, it's not going to be related to any of those frequencies. So you'd know that that wasn't related with that. Or it might drive up what we would call the one time. So the speed of the machine might be creating more vibration, because as it rotates, that might be caused by the movement on the mountings. So yes, is the answer. You could differentiate it.
I'm imagining it, because I haven't an idea what it is as being like one of those medical monitors, you know, the ones that you put for your heartbeat and everything else. Mm. Do you place physical monitors in, on, around machinery to get all, to read all this
yes.
activity, yeah?
Yeah, so...
So if take another example, the same one, Intel. I don't know whether you do Intel or not, but it doesn't matter. You go into an Intel plant. Do you then go around sticking your little monitors on each one of their machines?
Yes, we do. Now, non-intrusively, so you don't make any break in the case of the machine or anything like that. But yes, you physically put that on, because if you want to get good vibration signal, you've got to have good attachment and in the right position on the machine.
And who guesses or works out where the good places are?
We would, our team, and we would actually take ownership on that, because again, if you get Eastway involved, we're taking on that responsibility for you for the reliability. Therefore, we want to know how the sensors went on, where they went on.
And obviously, if you take on that responsibility, that's built into your contract.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty onerous.
Yeah, well, we have a great long-standing partnership with our clients and it works well. And we take that on, and it hasn't been a problem for us.
Do you sleep at night? You do?
I do. Well, I do be coming up with loads of ideas early in the morning.
Oh, good. Okay. Now, one other thing that I've learned from you only in the last 15-odd, 20 minutes, just prior to coming in here, is that, and I thought that large corporations all centrally procured, that was meant to be good practice.
Mm-hmm.
Seemingly, from what you told me, mm-hmm. that if you're working with a big brand name that will go nameless,
mm-hmm.
it doesn't mean that you're also doing their business, say, in Oakland, California, or in Uruguay. It could be the same company with a different monitoring company.
It could be, yes. And that's a mix across the industry. So some of them might be locally sourced. That might be a global decision that it's going to be locally sourced. More and more we're seeing that they are being sourced from HQ. And that's really our drive, because we want to be that preferred global reliability partner.
Which neatly brings me to my question about what can Team GBS, our listeners, do for you? Because what I understood from the answer was, if they know somebody in your preferred business areas, anywhere around the world, is that you'd like to talk to them. If they can affect, love that word, affect, hot introductions.
Absolutely. So if you are interested in what you heard, or you liked what you heard, look around your connections. If you know somebody working in maintenance reliability, we would love to speak with them.
She seems to be a very nice person as well. So, you know, at least you can have a nice chat with her.
Absolutely. We won't hound anybody.
Final question to you, Elaine Berkery, is who would you hire in a heartbeat?
Yeah, so I thought this was an interesting one. And because we're very US focused on our recruitment at the moment, I went for a reliability leader and a female reliability leader in the US, Rendella Wenzel. So she's a global reliability manager with Eli Lilly in Indiana. And she would have a wealth of experience, and I admire everything that she has done. She's an engineer like myself. But if she were to come on the Eastway team and decided to leave Eli Lilly, she would bring a lot of experience. And what Big Pharma are looking for, she'd bring reliability experience, and she'd also bring, I think, a lot of connections for us.
And you would offer her a lovely place to live down in Limerick and lots of Munster rugby.
Oh, yes, absolutely. We're not far from it at all.
Yeah, would Rendella like Munster rugby, do you think?
I don't know. I think anybody might enjoy going to a game or two. We'll see.
Good. Elaine Berkery, we will monitor for you. Like the one? the way I got monitoring there? We will monitor this for you. And if anybody around the globe who's listening to this podcast, and believe me, a big thanks at you. I should have said it earlier to the Enterprise Ireland team, because they sent the Leo Clancy interview on episode 82 out to their 81,000 database. And anybody in that database who hears this podcast, please get in touch with us if you know ways of getting Eastway Tech from Limerick, beautiful Limerick, into markets anywhere in the world. And you, how are you across Europe?
Yeah, so we actually did, now that you mentioned Leo Clancy, the Enter the Eurozone program with EI last year, and we're entering the Benelux region. So we've already done some...
courtesy of EI, was it?
Yes, yeah.
Okay. You better say nice things about them. So they are terrific people to work with.
They are great, to be fair. And we have a great development advisor in EI, and also the team in...
You better name it. Him, her.
Her, Susan Cahill. Yeah, she's been really supportive of us.
You'll find it very useful. People like hearing their names. Susan Cahill, a big shout out to you. Didn't I tell you that you wouldn't know what questions I might ask you? Elaine Berkery, you're so kind to come all the way from Limerick to us for this. Director, Eastway Tech. Anybody who can introduce business to Eastway Tech, please get in contact with me or Elaine Berkery at Eastway Tech in Limerick. Thanks so much for joining us on That Great Business Show. And that is it from That Great Business Show, episode 83. Please share, like, retweet this podcast with all your connections, and do it now, please, before you forget. As we say, a click of a button for you, commercial success for us. Also, press the subscribe button now, and then you'll always have us to hand wherever you want. And do tell your pals in business that we are Ireland's best business podcast and that they need to listen to us. We have a very successful LinkedIn page where we talk to our followers all week long. So if you want to know us better, have a chat with us, that's where you do it. If Twitter is your thing, you'll find us at TeamGBS1. We're still getting lots of love for our new jingles man from deepest Georgia, USA. My former radio producer, Ruth Devania, even sent me her version of it. Well, it's a version in her deepest Galway accent. And no, we're not using it, Ruthie. And we do want your ads. Great brands like Big Red Cloud, Microfinance Ireland, Disney, Virgin Media, Udo's de Goethe, advertise with us, and you should too. And we love recording here at the Dublin Podcast Studios in Dundrum, where today's team includes sound engineer Mark Moorbase McCarthy, and later Peter Turn It Up to 11 Rice will add in those lovely stings and more, making us the world's best sounding podcast. If you'd like the Dublin Podcast Studios to help make your podcast, give Peter Rice a buzz. And as always, the great business insights you hear on That Great Business Show are only made possible thanks to our sponsor, the great makers of the world's best shaving oil, De Facto, made in Mayo, sold worldwide. And I should have asked you, Elaine Berkery, what is your favourite shaving oil?
De Facto. Of course.
Didn't I warn you? I'll ask you anything. And I'm shameless. And don't forget to buy Business Plus magazine, where we now have our regular column all about the podcast. So for me, Conal O'Moran, Vuur Mila Bajas, Agus Slán Tamil.